Chapter 31. The quick. But he was not looking at her. His stare was directed to Heemskerk, who, with his back to him, and with his hand still up to his face, was hissing curses through his teeth, and she saw him in profile, glaring at her balefully with one black, evil eye. "What's the matter?" asked old Nelson, very much bewildered. She did not answer him. She thought of Jasper on the deck of the brig, gazing up at the lighted bungalow, and she felt frightened. It was a mercy that one of them, at least, was on board out of the way. She only wished he were 100 miles off. And yet she was not certain that she did. Had Jasper been mysteriously moved, that moment to reappear on the veranda, she would have thrown her consistency, her firmness, her self-possession, to the winds, and flown into his arms. "What is it? What is it?" insisted the unsuspecting Nelson, getting quite excited. "Why, this minute you were playing a tune," and Freya, unable to speak in her apprehension of what was coming, she was also fascinated by that black, evil, glaring eye, only nodded slightly at the lieutenant, as much as to say, "Us look at him." "Why, yes," exclaimed old Nelson. "See." What on earth? Meantime, he had cautiously approached Heemskerk, who, bursting into incoherent imprecations, was stamping with both feet where he stood. The indignity of the blow, the rage of baffled purpose, the ridicule of the exposure, and the impossibility of revenge maddened him to a point when he simply felt he must howl with fury. "Oh, oh, oh," he howled, stamping across the veranda, as though he meant to drive his foot through the floor at every step. "Why, is his face hurt?" asked the astounded old Nelson. The truth dawned suddenly upon his innocent mind. "Hear me," he cried, enlightened. "Et some brandy, quick, Freya. You are subject to it, Lieutenant. Fiendish, eh? I know, I know. Used to go crazy all of a sudden myself in the time. And the little bottle of laudanum from the medicine chest too, Freya. Look sharp. Don't you see he's got a toothache?" And, indeed, what other explanation could have presented itself to the guileless old Nelson, beholding this cheek nursed with both hands, these wild glances, these stampings, this distracted swaying of the body? It would have demanded a preternatural acuteness to hit upon the true cause. Freya had not moved. She watched Heemskerk savagely inquiring, black stare directed stealthily upon herself. "Ha, you would like to be let off," she said to herself. She looked at him unflinchingly, thinking it out. The temptation of making an end of it all without further trouble was irresistible. She gave an almost imperceptible nod of assent, and glided away. "Hurry up that brandy," old Nelson shouted, as she disappeared in the passage. Heemskerk relieved his deeper feelings by a sudden string of curses in Dutch and English which he sent after her. He raved to his heart's content, flinging to and fro the veranda, and kicking chairs out of his way, while Nelson, whose sympathy was profoundly stirred by these evidences of agonizing pain, hovered round his dear and dreaded lieutenant, fussing like an old hen. Dear me, is it so bad? I know well what it is. I used to frighten my poor wife sometimes. Do you get it often like this, Lieutenant?" Heemskerk shouldered him viciously out of his way, with a short, insane laugh. But his staggering host took it in good part. A man beside himself with excruciating toothache is not responsible. "Go into my room, Lieutenant," he suggested urgently. "Throw yourself on my bed. We will get something to ease you in a minute." He seized the poor sufferer by the arm, and forced him gently onwards to the very bed, on which Heemskerk, in a renewed access of rage, flung himself down with such force that he rebounded from the mattress to the height of quite a foot. "Dear me," exclaimed the scared Nelson, and incontinently ran off to hurry up the brandy and the laudanum, very angry that so little alacrity was shown in relieving the tortures of his precious guest. In the end he got these things himself. Half an hour later, he stood in the inner passage of the house, surprised by faint, spasmodic sounds of a mysterious nature, between laughter and sobs. He frowned, then went straight towards his daughter's room and knocked at the door. Freya, her glorious fair hair framing her white face and rippling down a dark blue dressing gown, opened it partly. The light in the room was dim. Antonia, crouching in a corner, rocked herself backwards and forwards, uttering feeble moans. Old Nelson had not much experience in various kinds of feminine laughter, but he was certain there had been laughter there. "Very unfeeling, very unfeeling," he said, with weighty displeasure. "Had it there, so amusing in a man being in pain? I should have thought a woman a young girl, he was so funny," murmured Freya, whose eyes glistened strangely in the semi-obscurity of the passage. "And then, you know, I don't like him," she added, in an unsteady voice. "Funny," repeated old Nelson, amazed at this evidence of callousness in one so young. "Who don't like him? Do you mean to say that, because you don't like him, why, it's simply cruel. Don't you know it's about the worst sort of pain there is? Dogs have been known to go mad with it." "He certainly seemed to have gone mad," Freya said with an effort, as if she were struggling with some hidden feeling. "But her father was launched. And you know how he is. He notices everything. He is a fellow to take offense for the least little thing, regular Dutchman, and I want to keep friendly with him. It's like this, my girl. If that Raja of ours were to do something silly, and you know he is a sulky, rebellious beggar and the authorities took into their heads that my influence over him wasn't good, you would find yourself without a roof over your head," she cried. "Hat nonsense, father," in a not very assured tone, and discovered that he was angry, angry enough to achieve irony. "Yes, old Nelson or Nielsen, irony. Just a gleam of it. Oh, of course, if you have means of your own, a mansion, a plantation that I know nothing of," but he was not capable of sustained irony. "Tell you they would bundle me out of here," he whispered forcibly. "Without compensation, of course. I know he's Dutch. And the lieutenant's just the fellow to start the trouble going. He has the ear of influential officials. I wouldn't offend him for anything on no consideration whatever. What did you say?" It was only an inarticulate exclamation. If she ever had a half-formed intention of telling him everything, yes, he had given it up now. It was impossible, both out of regard for his dignity and for the peace of his poor mind. "I don't care for him myself very much," old Nelson's subdued undertone confessed in a sigh. "He's easier now," he went on, after a silence. "I've given him up my bed for the night. I shall sleep on my veranda, in the hammock. No, I can't say I like him either, but from that to laugh at a man, because he's driven crazy with pain, is a long way. You've surprised me, Freya." That side of his face is quite flushed. Her shoulders shook convulsively under his hands, which he laid on her paternally. His straggly, wiry mustache brushed her forehead in a goodnight kiss. She closed the door, and went away from it to the middle of the room, before she allowed herself a tired-out sort of laugh, without buoyancy. "Flushed. A little flushed," she repeated to herself. "Hope so, indeed." A little, her eyelashes were wet. Antonia, in her corner, moaned and giggled, and it was impossible to tell where the moans ended and the giggles began. The mistress and the maid had been somewhat hysterical, for Freya, on fleeing into her room, had found Antonia there, and had told her everything. "I have avenged you, my girl," she exclaimed. And then they had laughingly cried, and cryingly laughed with admonitions sh, "not so loud. Be quiet," on one part, and interludes of "I'm so frightened. He's an evil man," on the other. Antonia was very much afraid of Heemskerk. She was afraid of him because of his personal appearance. Because of his eyes and his eyebrows, and his mouth and his nose and his limbs. Nothing could be more rational. And she thought him an evil man, because, to her eyes, he looked evil. No ground for an opinion could be sounder. In the dimness of the room, with only a nightlight burning at the head of Freya's bed, the camarista crept out of her corner to crouch at the feet of her mistress, supplicating in whispers. There's the brig. Captain Allen. Let us run away at once, oh, let us run away. I am so frightened. Let us. I. Run away. Thought Freya to herself, without looking down at the scared girl. Ever. Both the resolute mistress under the mosquito net, and the frightened maid lying curled up on a mat at the foot of the bed, did not sleep very well that night. The person that did not sleep at all was Lieutenant Heemskerk. He lay on his back staring vindictively in the darkness. Inflaming images and humiliating reflections succeeded each other in his mind, keeping up, augmenting his anger. A pretty tale this to get about. But it must not be allowed to get about. The outrage had to be swallowed in silence. A pretty affair. Fooled, led on, and struck by the girl and probably fooled by the father too. But no. Nielsen was but another victim of that shameless hussy, that brazen minx, that sly, laughing, kissing, lying. No, he did not deceive me on purpose, thought the tormented lieutenant. But I should like to pay him off, all the same, for being such an imbecile, well, someday, perhaps. One thing he was firmly resolved on. He had made up his mind to steal early out of the house. He did not think he could face the girl without going out of his mind with fury. Fire and perdition. 10,000 devils. I shall choke here before the morning, he muttered to himself, lying rigid on his back on old Nelson's bed, his breast heaving for air. He arose at daylight and started cautiously to open the door. Faint sounds in the passage alarmed him, and remaining concealed he saw Freya coming out. This unexpected sight deprived him of all power to move away from the crack of the door. It was the narrowest crack possible, but commanding the view of the end of the veranda. Freya made for that end hastily to watch the brig passing the point. She wore her dark dressing gown. Her feet were bare, because, having fallen asleep towards the morning, she ran out headlong in her fear of being too late. Heemskerk had never seen her looking like this, with her hair drawn back smoothly to the shape of her head, and hanging in one heavy, fair tress down her back, and with that air of extreme youth, intensity, and eagerness. And at first he was amazed, and then he gnashed his teeth. He could not face her at all. He muttered a curse, and kept still behind the door. With a low, deep-breathed H. When she first saw the brig already underway, she reached for Nelson's long glass reposing on brackets high up the wall. The white sleeve of the dressing gown slipped back, uncovering her white arm as far as the shoulder. Heemskerk, gripping the door handle, as if to crush it, felt like a man just risen to his feet from a drinking bout. And Freya knew that he was watching her. She knew. As he had seen the door move as she came out of the passage. She was aware of his eyes being on her, with scornful bitterness, with triumphant contempt. You are there, she thought, leveling the long glass. H, well, look on, then. The green islets appeared like black shadows, the ascensi was smooth as glass, the clear robe of the colorless dawn, in which even the brig appeared shadowy, had a hem of light in the east. Directly Freya had made out Jasper on deck, with his own long glass directed to the bungalow, she laid hers down, and raised both her beautiful white arms above her head. In that attitude of supreme cry she stood still, glowing with the consciousness of Jasper's adoration going out to her figure held in the field of his glass away there, and warmed too, by the feeling of evil passion, the burning, covetous eyes of the other, fastened on her back. In the fervor of her love, in the caprice of her mind, and with that mysterious knowledge of masculine nature women seem to be born to, she thought. You are looking on you will you must. Then you shall see something. She brought both her hands to her lips, then flung them out, sending a kiss over the sea, as if she wanted to throw her heart along with it on the deck of the brig. Her face was rosy, her eyes shone. Her repeated, passionate gesture seemed to fling kisses by the hundred again and again and again, while the slowly ascending sun brought the glory of color to the world, turning the islets green, the sea blue, the brig below her white, dazzlingly white in the spread of her wings with the red ensign streaming like a tiny flame from the peak. And each time she murmured with a rising inflection, "Take this and this and this," till suddenly her arms fell. She had seen the ensign dipped in response, and next moment the point below hit the hull of the brig from her view. Then she turned away from the balustrade, and, passing slowly before the door of her father's room with her eyelids lowered, and an enigmatic expression on her face, she disappeared behind the curtain. But instead of going along the passage, she remained concealed, and very still on the other side, to watch what would happen. For some time the broad, furnished veranda remained empty. Then the door of old Nelson's room came open suddenly, and Heemskerk staggered out. His hair was rumpled, his eyes bloodshot, his unshaven face looked very dark. He gazed wildly about, saw his cap on a table, snatched it up, and made for the stairs quietly, but with a strange, tottering gait, like the last effort of waning strength. Shortly after his head had sunk below the level of the floor, Freya came out from behind the curtain, with compressed, scheming lips, and no softness at all in her luminous eyes. He could not be allowed to sneak off scot-free. Never, never. She was excited. She tingled all over, as he had tasted blood. He must be made to understand that as he had been aware of having been watched, he must. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.